Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? It's Andrew again, founder of Marknology, here on Startup Hustle to cover all things e-commerce, Amazon, entrepreneurship. This is a podcast for founders by founders. Before I make our introduction to today's episode, from a title to our guests, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Canva. Canva is where you go to collaborate and create amazing graphic design for free. Whether it's a presentation to share an idea, a video to launch your business, or a social post to start a conversation, with Canva, you can design anything. Discover the magic of visual communication and how Canva helps you create a lasting impact today. Visit canva.com to learn more. Today's title is called Building Business Momentum with Limited Resources. And I'm telling you, as a bootstrapped entrepreneur and a bootstrap founder myself, I know a lot about this, and I know a lot about making a little go a long way. And today's guest, Sylvia Myers, is going to dig into that with me, not only sharing her own story, but ways that businesses and how they're helping businesses through organic SEO and things like that really make a difference in their business and their growth. Sylvia is also an Australian native, so we're going to have fun with Canva as our sponsor today. Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew. I absolutely love Canva. I have to say, like, it couldn't be a better sponsor for our show because, yeah, I just couldn't live without Canva. I just spent a good hour and a half on Canva before this interview. So that's just
I love it. I fell in love. I hadn't used the tool that much because I have a team, you know, and I just don't do that much of the design or anything. And I know it's a lot of times Canva can be seen by designers as like, this is a starting point to like, if you're not that great, get really, you know, get better and be able to create things. And I listened to her episode on how I built this and I was just like, okay, I like this company. I like the founders. I like everything about it. So,
awesome. So, you know, one of the founders, the co-founders, Melanie, obviously they're both Australian. You know, she's almost like a national hero, and definitely in the entrepreneurial community in Australia, you know, we all look up to Melanie, you know, and all of us women want to be like Melanie. But, you know, one of the things that I love about it is that she said when they started the business, you know, the whole idea was like, now anybody can design. And, you know, all of us like in entrepreneurship, like you have to wear all of these different hats. And I was like, anybody can design, but Sylvia. You know, Sylvia is numbers driven. She's very left brain. She's very logical, you know, systems and processes, all this kind of stuff. I am not like, I'm not good with colors. You know, I wasn't able to like pair outfits or nothing like that. So I'm like, anybody can design, but Sylvia. And, you know, now like so many things have changed, but I'm like the chief designer in our business, you know, because you're like, you've got the idea as an entrepreneur, and often like it's so hard to explain it, right? And we even had a full-time graphic designer who was using Canva and his like Photoshop and all these things. And sometimes it was crazy expensive, you know, like I had this vision, like I had this image in my mind, and I was like, it's got to be like this, you know, like
design.
Yeah. And, you know, once, like, no kidding, we like paid for one image, you know, 1 week worth of time, you know, it's for like a US based person. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like, we're not talking little money here.
Yep.
I just feel like really anybody can design, you know, really anybody can design. So for
I love me, it. I love businesses that solve problems like that.
Yeah. That was a game changer, you know, because sometimes we falsely believe in small business that it takes a lot of money to make money. And sometimes, like, you know, we just so imitate what all the big brands do, you know, but big brand is not somebody we should model.
Right.
Because they have like a 45-year head start and, you know, $5 billion. Like, that's not how you're going to get your business going.
No. And I mean, I could talk about that for this whole hour, because as someone that started my business while in debt, bootstrapped and had to just be super creative in order to make this thing come to life. You know, I look at startups that spend a majority of their time, their first few years, honestly, just building investment, right? They're just like trying to get investments. Oh, I can't do this if I don't have this. I can't do this if I don't have this. And really what they've spent is 2 years building investment. Now they have to go build their business, and, you know, yeah, or they have too many funds and they know what to do with. And it, you know, if you're not having to learn it, it's like a calculator can help you if you understand the principles behind the math, you know, kind of thing. So we'll save that for another day, because I want to get into, sure. I want to get into your story a little bit. And we talked about Melanie and Canva, but let's talk about Sylvia a little bit. So you're in Mexico now. You know, just to briefly for our listeners, her husband moved from Australia, after the pandemic, to Mexico to be, in a more centralized time zone, to be able to continue to educate themselves so that they can help their clients. Something that I highly admire from coaches and consultants that are, you know, getting paid to help people. You have to stay educated yourself. This stuff is changing so fast, and you get to choose your inputs. But you didn't start in Mexico. You didn't, you know, you have origins before that. And we're talking about your company, Traffic Ninjas, specifically. But let's start with young Sylvia. Like, did you always know you were going to be an entrepreneur? Or you said you're like logic-based kind of thinking. Like, you know, when you were a girl thinking about university or college, like, where was your head at that time?
Yeah, good question. I definitely never thought I was going to be an entrepreneur. Although looking back, I was always entrepreneurial, you know, thinking about that. I was always like, you know, my family was very educated, but yet had a very financially simple background.
Okay.
You know, I grew up in Slovakia, which at the time was behind the Iron Curtain, and, you know, the times were changing, you know, this is like before the Berlin Wall fell. And, you know, my mom was like, you know, so focused on her job and you know, dad on his job. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was like 2 years old. And so, like, money was always an issue.
Yeah.
And money was always an issue. And it was also that old school thinking, obviously, in an economy that had no business, right? There was no business in communism. So nobody even thought of being an entrepreneur, because that yep. did not exist.
You'll get killed or removed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just so... So I grew up in an environment where it was like, you get education, and then you get a good job. And that's what it was all about, right? But I guess my thinking was always like, well, you know, there was so much pain and suffering in my family. And I believed at the time that it was because of money. Although, you know, now I know that it wasn't just because of money. But, you know, I believed at the time it was because of money. So I was always like, okay, how do I get myself out of this? How do I do something differently to essentially elevate myself out of that and, you know, help out the family or things like that. And then I, you know, I quickly learned that you essentially have to turn up at places where people don't expect you to turn up. that's what, that was, I guess, my first entrepreneurial thinking, you know, because I was like, okay, I was, you know, I was always smart and driven and hardworking, but I wasn't like the smartest kid who would get the awards, you know, and who would get like the, you know, the scholarships or whatever. I wasn't like that good. And so I was like, okay, I'm driven, but you know, my parents don't have money to like, you know, after the Berlin Wall fell, to like, you know, pay for language classes for me or anything like that, right? So I was like, so I've got to find another way. And you know, without understanding that at the time, I now know that already back then I was a ninja, right? And that's why our business is called the Traffic Ninjas, because you know, when you are a small business, you just got to think underground. You cannot like even remember, you know, the teenage ninjas, you know, the Ninja Turtles, like they have not like come from privileged backgrounds. Like they came from effing sewage.
Yep.
With some certain small superpowers, and they were always outnumbered. And sometimes we just let this, the outnumbering, we just let that to like get to us, you know? And I guess that's what was really entrepreneurial, I think, for me, was the thinking mindset. It was like, okay, you know, I'm here right now, you know, and I want to achieve something big. I didn't know what it was at the time yet. And you know, to achieve something big, you have to get to a good university, but to get to a good university, you had to speak like German and English, and you know, you have to be like super skilled. And I failed the German class. I studied for it as much as I could, but again, I couldn't afford any of those private classes. So I failed the German exam. And as I failed the German exam, you know, and this is like the high school break, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like, I didn't get into university, you know, this is the end of the world. I'm just like forever just going to be nobody. And then I met, then I bumped into like an old friend of mine, and he was like, hey, like, did you know that the university in Austria has like this thing where you can, you know, sign up to study there for free. And as a result, they might be able to subsidize some like German language classes. And I was like, okay, what's the catch? You know, I was like, this sounds amazing, but what's the catch, right? And so the catch was that you had to get yourself to a university in your home country, whatever that was. You had to get yourself into something and to be able to
transfer,
you know, study that, to be able to transfer. And so I was like, okay, well, what are my options here, right? And you know, it was something I'd never intended or loved studying, but it was again like the ninja, you know, what is the field where like they don't have any women and they totally want women and they're just gonna like take you in. And so it was the field is like, I don't even know how to say it in English, but it was like a scientific mathematics. It was like something that these days is like really cool, and so many like cool smart girls go there, you know.
Nerds are cool now.
But back then it wasn't cool, and I definitely wasn't talented or skilled enough or whatever, but somehow I just got myself in. And so with that, you know, I transferred to Austria, where I didn't have to pay the tuition fee and where they subsidized the language classes. But then I had to also attend all of these mathematics classes in German language that I didn't understand. So, you know, it wasn't easy, but anyway, you know, 6 years fast forward, you know, I managed to, you know, transfer into a different field. So, you know, I ended up studying political science, which I really wanted to do at the time. And, you know, it was such a great field to study and so applicable to entrepreneurship, because it's all about like taking new information, what's going on, and like
applying it.
And like applying it and analyzing it. And then I did another ninja thing. And that was like, okay, Austria suddenly was giving away scholarships to the world. And I was like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like I got myself to this foreign land, which I had no idea about to start with. But now there is like another opportunity. And that's what us entrepreneurs do, right? Like we just see an opportunity and we just grab it, you know, whether you are scared or not. Like, I was so scared. And so I rocked up to these like scholarship interviews. I was like, okay, what is the nichest, most underground ninja field that nobody is going to apply for? Because that's essentially what it is, right? Like, I've got to make my niche so small that only I'm going to be able to fit in. Because otherwise I've got competition. And once I have competition, like, it's game over. Because I always knew, like, German wasn't my first language. You know, I had just learned it a few years ago back then, right? Definitely didn't have, you know, money or some amazing results from the local kids. And so I was like, okay, I found a university in Australia that this scholarship program applied for. And of course, I chose the most niche thing that actually ended up being super, super interesting. And that was Aboriginal studies. So, studying the native population of Australia. And I got in. And it was like, oh my God. Oh my God, this is like so crazy, you know. But again, because it was so niche and it was in an unsexy town in Australia that nobody like really wanted to go to, because everybody was like, I want to go to Sydney or Melbourne or Perth, you know, somewhere by the ocean. So I went to Canberra. You know, if you have any Australian listeners, they are
I'm in Kansas City. So in my country, it's the same thing.
Yeah. but anyway, I got in and, you know, and they paid for flights and for accommodation and for the tuition fee. And I got some pocket money and, you know, and that was my ticket to my life.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I relate to that on so many levels. One, I'm 35. So I lived in Moscow 1 year, went to Belarus, things like that. It was in early 90s. So
wow.
I know it was after the wall, but it was still,
very raw,
very raw, very, very raw. Things I'm still working through in my life, just in my mental, you know, just like letting some of those things go that we saw. Related as being a kid from Africa at 16 that came back and didn't have opportunities. You know, family is below average income, very, very below average income opportunities. I failed classes in public school. I was homeschooled and private schooled kind of like in Africa. But when I came back, I was thrown into public school, had no credits, was like, you know, 2 years from finishing and had to take these upper level math classes to get credit for the classes beneath them. That's how they were going to give me credit to graduate in time. And so I was taking French 3, for example, and it was all written. Well, in Africa, I was taking tutoring for French because my parents speak French. Even though we grew up in all these different places, they all speak Lingala, Swahili. They don't all speak French, right? And I knew how to speak French. I could kind of talk, but I couldn't write. Okay, so, you know, just how it is as a kid, you kind of like learn to talk, but not write. So I'm taking French 3, trying to write. I know more French than the kids there, but I can't really test well. Well, what I really learned is I was a lot like you. I was like smart. I'm smart. I know I'm smart, but testing wise, I never showed smart, right? So I wasn't getting the top in the class. I wasn't getting these types of things. I was learning like how to survive in Congo kind of skills instead of like studying the textbooks, you know? And it wasn't until I found e-commerce really that it was like, I am male, I'm white male, but I'm also like from no opportunity and like kind of almost like an immigrant in some ways. And so the challenges were there, if that makes sense. And it was like e-commerce was the field where it was niche at the time when I found it and no one was really there. And if you were the best or you won, you could win, you know? And that was like even later, but I was in a band playing music in college. I was the first to get educated in my family, college education. So that was a big deal for me just to accomplish it. You know, I was on my own. I wanted to get educated outside of religious studies. And so I was going to school for computer science because I saw my friends go to school for business or communication or these things, and none of them were getting jobs. So I was like, if I'm going to pay all this money to go to this school while touring and working three jobs, I'm going to pick a field that like will fit me, nerd, you know, kind of thing. Like, I'm just like, I'm going to pick this one that at least I can get a job. Like I need to be able to get a job, you know? And so computer science led me here. And I won't go into all of that because a lot of our listeners have heard some of that, but just really related to, you know, your own story. And I try not to say that I wasn't the smartest or the brightest anymore, because what I really realized is, I've managed hundreds of millions of dollars on Amazon now at this point. And so me not being good at math in high school means nothing now.
Yes.
Right. But it was overwhelming then, you know, and I just was comparing myself to all these other kids and students.
Yes.
But what I did learn because of our path is how to be a ninja, you know, how to stick out when you don't have the money to stick out, or how to find resources when they're not there, or you just know how to get by because it's fight or flight. You know, you're in fight or flight mode. And so because you have to go through that, you're much more prepared, I believe, for entrepreneurship. And, you know, some of the troubles and the heartaches and the things that happen because of that tough journey at the beginning, right?
So yes.
I've tried to reframe it a little bit, because I think there's a lot of probably kids and students like me that are really smart that just haven't got the right light shined on them, or haven't had the right teachers, or, you know, weren't in the right system. You know, the American public school system failed me, at least as someone that moved in. And I'm sure there's lots of kids that can relate to moving to America and not fitting in at school, or not being good at the classes because everyone's just kind of given the same program. And here I am, in my opinion, leading an industry in the Amazon space, as far as there was no one doing it before me. Now there's an industry, you know, and I'm like, how can a kid that was a failure in school now be doing something like this? So I didn't mean to take that much time, but just between fellow founders, between us here, like, you know, I think there's so many people that can relate to that. And I knew you had an accent, but I didn't know where in the world to place your accent. So I'm glad you shared that with us.
it's kind of people kind of guess and typically have a hard time, you know, finding where it's from, because I took my husband's name. So, but you know what, it's also one of the things where taking his name and leaving my name behind was also a big step, you know, because it's not just, and I spoke to somebody at a conference about this last week, and he has a background from the Bahamas. His parents, original birth parents, were from the Bahamas, but he got adopted by a Caucasian American family. And he was saying that, you know, just a name sometimes like can completely change your life and how people perceive you. And you know, when I first started the business, I still had my maiden name, and my name was Kmetova. You know, it's a very Slavic name. And whilst I didn't want to leave my name behind, I also realized that, unfortunately, you know, in this world, we do a lot judge just by what person's name is. And you can have an entirely completely different life experience just by changing your name. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, you know, to me, because I was obviously a grown up by then.
But you're logical and smart enough to know and be aware that that is a thing.
That it just, is a factor.
Just like me being, like, I speak to it because I am a white male in the US, right? And there's a lot of press about all of that and those things. But not everyone can judge a book by its cover, right?
Yes.
And I think that's what I do appreciate about the year 2022. And, you know, where we are is like, you know, now Eastern Europeans are seen as like the brains, the wizards behind a lot of e-commerce and like, you know, PPC and like, you know, in my space, if people are talking about, oh, who are you using to help you with advertising, or like, where are you getting your talent? And it's like Eastern Europe, you know, and it's like, it's a positive thing. But I remember, you know, in the past, it would have been like, oh, do you trust that? Do you trust that? You know?
And that's the thing, that it isn't now there's a positive thing, but you know, for your own identity, like, I don't necessarily feel like I'm from there anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's been 22 years since I left. You know, totally. I left, I still have the accent, obviously, but it's like I now lived abroad because, you know, after Austria, I live in Australia, and then back in the UK, and then a little bit in Belgium, and then back in Australia. So, and now obviously we're in Mexico. So I feel like it's been such a big part of my life that, you know, having a name that doesn't sound Slavic makes people wondering, oh, you know, but gives me in a way more freedom, in the sense that people don't put me into a box. Because you know, the thing is, like, you know, my accent does not sound Russian, or it does not necessarily sound, you know, super strong Polish, or, you know, even, I don't know, Hungarian or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
No, totally. I had an accent. I actually got teased so much I got rid of it. And that makes me sad. But I did. I really got bullied so much that I stopped. That's I just got crazy. Rid of my African accent, you know. I wanted to fit in and be left alone, you know. And I'm ashamed of that now. But it's a real thing. And I think that I'm very much in the same place as you were. I'm 35. I think it was like, you know, 32, 33, where I finally had spent just as much time here as I did like growing up, you know. And so it's kind of this difference now, kind of owning that, you know, for me. But okay, so before we go, I have some questions. I want to move us along, but as a reminder, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Canva. With Canva, you can design your ideas with ease, get inspired with over 500,000 free templates and a rich content library that helps you and your team achieve your goals. Sign up and start designing for free at canva.com. Sylvia, today's title is Building Business Momentum with Limited Resources, right? And I think we've talked about, even just in your origin story and me sharing some of mine, like what limited resources can look like. And, you know, that can be whether, even if you come from opportunity or you come from an affluent family, you can still have limited resources when you're starting a business, of course. So, you know, I see some people that are like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. And I get my eyes light up when I come up with like, oh, let me help you brainstorm with ways to do this with a small budget, because that just gets me excited. I think it's even more of a challenge. You went to school for Aboriginal studies. You're in Australia. Let's skip a little bit to where, like, you know, ninjas came into the play, right? Yeah. So where did Traffic Ninjas kind of get birthed? And you know, this idea of helping people with limited budgets with organic SEO really take hold?
Yes. Good question. So I got myself a great career in Australia, and, you know,
you were doing what at that time?
So I was doing essentially management consulting in a few different industries, you know, lots in e-commerce, lots in the digital space as well, but also in lots of boring, well-paid industries like digital marketing in banking, you know, that's like incredibly, incredibly well-paid, but it's so incredibly toxic at the same time. And so, you know, I felt that at a point in my life, like, wow, I achieved these things that I thought I wanted. You know, I am now like wearing the suits and high heels to work, and I'm like consulting the CEOs, and I'm getting paid like a few thousands of dollars a day.
That financial thing as a kid, as a girl, that you thought was like the most important thing, you had accomplished that.
Yeah. And I thought it was so important, and it just was so toxic, you know. It was toxic, and also I just felt like I just want to be free, you know. I thought those finances were going to give me freedom, but actually they didn't give me freedom because I wasn't learning anymore. You know, it's kind of like as a management consultant, you take to go from a company to company and create a new solution and, you know, smoosh the boards and all of these kind of things and, you know, present the solution and then make sure that they get their bonus and blah, blah, blah. And so I felt like at some point I wasn't like growing myself. I was like, I'm not learning anymore. And, you know, this is not necessarily fun environment either. You know, it's extremely competitive. So you always kind of have to watch, you know, what you say, every single word, because it just became so political. And I was like, you know what? I just want to be free. And how else can I do that? And I was like, okay, so I, at that point, I had quite a lot of experience from e-commerce and from digital marketing, because I was doing all of these, I guess I was advising all of these, you know, big companies. And I was like, well, what if I take that? What if I take all of that information that I learned over all these years and I make it applicable for entrepreneurs, for small business owners? Because I could see that there were so many amazing product makers who had talent that I didn't have. You know, I didn't have a talent to come up with a new product concept and then bring it to life, to design it. You know, lots of our customers, or majority of our customers, are product makers. You know, like they might start with something creative on Etsy and then, you know, create a, over time, you know, full-time big business from that. But I just could see all of these like product makers who were so talented and they had talents that I didn't have. And, you know, even in the family on my husband's side, you know, his sister is like an amazing product maker. And I was like, I always found myself like telling them like, no, you've got to do this, do it like that. You know, don't spend your money there. Don't spend your money here. You know, just turn it around. And then I was like, well, how about I just actually start doing that? How about like I start doing that? And so that's how essentially the Traffic Ninjas were born. You know, it came from, you know, the perspective that, you know, all of this information and consulting that big businesses pay for, small businesses cannot pay for, yet they want to model them, which they don't have budgets for. So how do I, you know, how do I bridge this gap and essentially serve them so that, you know, the world can see their products? And
I love that.
You know, yeah.
No, I'm in a situation right now where I've started with like the Amazon industry, started with like FBA sellers is what they call them, or people that are private labeling product makers, like trying to, you know, they were the ones really looking at opportunity. The big brands weren't paying attention to Amazon. And there's a certain amount of work that just goes into building a brand and doing it right and running a team. And so, you know, for sustainability, in order to keep myself in business and my team in business, we've gone up the food chain a bit, you know, to get higher paying clients and brands that are going to be stable. But my passion and my heart is still, you know, with that bootstrapped, small budget mentality. It just takes almost, it takes double the work for the smaller brands almost, you know, to really be successful. You know, some of the things we did early in my business was, I had a great raid on I have somewhere I'm going with this, but like, you know, with Marknology, it was, I had a great office space location and some extra rooms. So I gave one room to a video content team and one room to a graphic designer. And I was trading them like very cheap rent in exchange for 10 hours a month or something from them toward my business.
Great.
You know, it was like, okay, it's kind of like the Airbnb model or something, you know, but it was like, okay, this is one resource I have. How can I help someone else to get help for myself? Or, you know, it was collaborations like that. That was like ways to be super tricky. You know, it was ways of, I found photographers that wanted like kind of a mission, like, you know, to help build a brand or to learn. And so I had them kind of helping me with social media at the beginning, you know, taking someone that's not, that has a passion that needs a project really to focus on and saying, hey, here's a project and a passion. I need help too. Do you want to like, and you know, I had to give up some control, but it was ways that I was getting help, getting people to buy into my mission, like before I had, you know, the dollars to do so, and just getting like really creative in those ways. Those are a couple examples, but you know, the list goes on and on and on in regards to like, how did you get things done? What are some ways we have about 10 minutes or so. And so I want to give like some practical advice to like young makers, like how Traffic Ninjas, well, one, how Traffic Ninjas works with smaller brands or makers trying to get going, but also, what are some practical things? Like, how do you work with makers alongside them? Is it just like creating content for them? Is it more so like business strategy? You know, like things like guerrilla warfare in marketing, like what are the things that Traffic Ninjas really does and how do you work alongside, you know, makers?
Yeah, great question. So essentially, we've created what we call a Traffic Ninja system.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, what we found is that lots of product makers and brand builders who we work with, you know, they're not necessarily numbers driven. You know, analytics is something they have to do. It's not something that they want to do. Even marketing is something they have to do. It's not what they want to do. You know, they really love creating their products and, you know, lots of them make them or manufacture them. And then, you know, over time they start doing that at scale. And so one of the biggest things how we work with them is essentially helping them learn a very, very simple system. Okay. You know, it's literally only just four steps. And the first step is helping them understand their ideal customer. Because, you know, the more and more, and particularly since last year, you know, since all of the online algorithms changed and privacy restrictions kicked in, the really most important part is for the entrepreneur, for the product seller, or brand builder to understand, like, who am I actually creating this product for? Who is my ideal customer? Because the algorithm can no longer learn that, right? It's like, gone are the days when we put $100 on Facebook ads and we could predict with a crystal clarity how many sales we were going to get out of that. You know, that algorithm doesn't do that anymore. And so as a result, it's kind of like, you know, when people have limited resources and they start running ads, it's kind of like fishing in a haystack. So, you know, we've got to be really crystal clear to cut through to really connect to the ideal customer. And unfortunately, what happens most of the time, I'll give you an example. We've got a, you know, an amazing customer in Italy, and she sells these handmade, you know, beautiful leather bags. And, you know, in the past, you could just put a handbag into a picture and create an ad out of that. And, you know, the algorithm would learn and you would predictably get sales because the picture was beautiful. But these days, it's more about just being beautiful, because if you just sell a product, that becomes a commodity. That's just a commodity.
Where's the story?
What's the story? Exactly. Like, there is and it's just a commodity. Is like commodity, your only essentially point of differentiation becomes price, you know. And like, so many brand builders are like, oh, but we provide great customer service. But hang on a minute, customer service and quality of your product, it's after purchase. That's after purchase, right? Like, that's how you get repeat business back. But connecting to that ideal customer, it's like, as you said, Andrew, what's the story? Why you need to buy from me? What makes me different? And who is that ideal customer? You know, it's not women between 18 to 65. It's like a specific person who has an aspiration, and I've got to cut through, and they have to see themselves in the post, in the ads, whatever you're putting out there, in the email. And that is the main, like the first and main part of the system, because, you know, in the past that just used to work, right? You put a beautiful image out, you run the algorithm, everything works like clockwork. And essentially what I find is that so many entrepreneurs just want to quickly skip that step. But when you skip it, it can hurt, you know, it can really hurt. And I'm not saying that, again, that you've got to have it perfect and not move along until it's perfect, because it's kind of like a work in progress, but you just always have to come back to who is that customer. That's like the main important thing. And once you figure that out, you know, the second step is, okay, at least I've got a basic understanding of who that customer is. So second is like, well, let me just throw in a few hooks. It's like going fishing, right? So like, again, in the past, you know, we just did A/B testing, but A/B testing, again, that, you know, no longer works. I mean, unless you're a big business with like unlimited resources. So you've got to just try and essentially test a few hooks organically, very simply, right? And like quickly you get a response, even just by boosting posts by a dollar or two. And then eventually when you have the library of hooks, you can build what we call magnets out of them. And these magnets, that's when you switch from pushing marketing to pull, because these magnets essentially attract your ideal customer, which you can then, you know, build that audience out of. And that's step four, to build your own audience, that essentially only you fit in that audience, right? And then suddenly all of the big brands essentially are not your competition anymore.
Yeah, I love it. Sylvia, that was beautifully said. I can relate so much, even in Marknology. Like, my customer has changed from when I started the business to where we are today. And I've had to change that customer, you know, profile of who I'm talking to. Is it the e-commerce manager? Is it the CEO himself? Is it the VP of sales? Is it, you know, the marketing director? Like, who am I talking to on the Marknology side? And then I think what's helped me is honestly just attempts. You know, we've worked with 300 plus brands on Amazon now. So dialing it, failing on those brands, figuring out, you know, for each product that we're selling, they have a different customer they're trying to reach, you know. And it can be, is it the professional bartender? Is it the amateur bartender that's on Amazon? You know, like, who's there? Is it like, is it your mom? Is it the mom buying the gift? Is it the person that's actually getting the gift that we're selling to? Like, who are we selling to? And, you know, that's why I think in content and in movies and in Hollywood, and you're seeing redheads in film, you know, you're seeing like ginger guys and girls in videos. You're seeing people just like creating ads and videos and content to a lot bigger market than just white, you know, white males and white females, like as traditional beauty goes, you know? And so they're trying to find, okay, let's get more minorities in film and more minorities in content. And who are you selling to? And like, let's speak to those people specifically. Gone are the days of, you know, a men's Cialis, which is like erectile dysfunction ad on ESPN when you're watching sports. And so you've got every man and woman in the US like watching some of these big sporting events, and they're showing an ad to a whole bunch of people it doesn't even apply to. You know, you can't do that if you're a small business. You have to be very select with, you know, where you're spending that money.
Exactly.
And so for me as a bootstrapped business, you know, I used to have a speech impediment. So like, much less being on a podcast, I had a stutter kind of, like, you know, I would just get so nervous. Now I speak and I'm on a podcast. But it was something that when I was bootstrapped, when I was really just thinking about how to grow my business, I was like, one, I want to go to these conferences and learn. Okay. I have to have money to get there. And then when I'm there, I want to get business. Like, I need to grow my business. So it was like, look, if I can get paid as a speaker to come, they pay my event or they pay my stay, and I'm able to speak there and get customers and branding. So it's like free marketing for me. And that, so, but what my challenge was that I need to be able to speak German, right? In your example, no, it wasn't German. For me, it was be able to get in front of people and talk about what we do. That was my challenge I had to overcome, you know? But the goal was, on the other side of this is free marketing for me, you know? And I get free education by getting to go to these conferences. So that was just a silly example, but one where I didn't have the budget to go buy a big booth and set up a big exhibit or pay to be a sponsor at these events. So I was like, okay, I have knowledge. Let me figure out how to get seen enough to create these magnets, right, for myself. So just sharing some examples. But as we round out, let's share one more tip with our listeners on just like, you know, what's one piece of advice you'd give to female founders like yourself? Because I think you can speak to a lot of them as a successful female founder, but really honestly to any founders that are, you know, don't have tons of budget, and are just looking to get started. You know, I used to be in networking and security out of college, and I was making more money than I ever had, and I hated it. I hated it. So I went to e-commerce and I found something that fit me. But for anyone trying to make that leap, maybe from a suit to something that they're passionate about, let's speak to that specifically. That's a specific thing. But what's a piece of advice you'd give to someone trying to make that leap or thinking about making that leap?
Thinking about making the leap, but somebody who already has products, for example?
No, someone that's maybe someone that wants to be a maker, or someone that wants to work alongside small business or do something like you've done with Traffic Ninjas. Mm-hmm. Not the maker themselves, but the Sylvia that founded Traffic Ninjas that was in a suit, you know, doing digital marketing for banking and just not loving her stuff. And now I can definitely tell that you're passionate about what you do. What was that kind of decision? What was that leap like for you when you decided to, hey, I'm actually going to go all in on this and build Traffic Ninjas?
Yeah. For me, it was really just like, I can no longer do this. Like I came home and I was like, hey, babe, I did it. And my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, he's like, you did what? And I said, I quit. And he's like, you quit what? I said, I quit my job. And he's like, what? What the hell? What are you going to do? Ah! You know? So he was all like panicking. I mean, he's happy now because he quit himself 2 years after me. Mm-hmm. And we run the business together. But you know, the piece of advice I would give is probably just don't be afraid. You know, don't be afraid, just do it. Because the scenario we always paint, that the worst case scenario we always paint is never as bad as we imagine it to be.
Yeah.
Like, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is that you're just gonna, in the future, find another job. And that's, you know, you're so capable of doing that. Because if you're thinking of entrepreneurship, then you already are so capable of being, you know, employable in so many other industries. We see this like across so many people who we work with, right? So just go for it. Don't be afraid. And, you know, the worst case scenario is never as bad as we think it is.
You're so right. My mom always tells me, go to the worst case scenario, go backwards from there. It's not really that bad. And I have a tattoo here. No one can see it that's listening, but it says, feel the fear and do it anyway. So mine says, don't have the fear and do it. Mine just says, you're going to have the fear no matter what. Feel it. But, you know, take the leap anyway, because there's nothing worse than, you know, being miserable for the rest of your life. You know, you just got to take a chance. What's there to lose? I do know that, like, when you put your passion and positive energy behind anything, you're better off than having negative energy behind something great, you know? So,
yeah,
Sylvia, thank you so much for sharing. I feel like I could just chat your story all day. And once again, a big thank you to today's episode sponsor, Canva. With Canva, you can work together from wherever, get on the same page as your team with seamless real-time collaboration. What will you design today? Explore and start designing for free at canva.com. I'm going to have all of Sylvia's LinkedIn, Instagram, social media handles in the notes. So if anyone's looking to reach out to Traffic Ninjas, well, one, you can find her at trafficninjas.com. But also all of her contact information will be at the below of the podcast show notes. So if you guys are looking to get some guidance or some help in getting your business going and really dialing in your messaging and your customer profile, I'm sure Sylvia would be happy to chat with you. I think I have a couple of projects to reach out to you too, Sylvia. So we'll connect offline. Thanks again, Hustlers, for tuning in. And thanks again, Sylvia, for your time.
Thank you.
See you next time, guys.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.